Hello and welcome to Hey Art, What's Good? We are a podcast where we like to check out cool art things in the north of England. My name's Alice.
And my name's Rosie.
And we've got a guest today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Eleanor from Mima.
Yeah. Hello, pleasure to have you here.
Or
pleasure to be here. Because although our lovely listeners can't tell, we are at the Mima right now.
We are.
It might sound different, who knows? I'm not wearing headphones, so we'll see. Something we like to do here on this podcast is to kind of check in with each other and see what's good or like something nice that's happened in our lives.
Keep it light, you know.
Yeah. For example, I just came back from holiday. That was pretty good. Had a fab time with my sister in Berlin. So that was quite good. I enjoyed that.
Nice one. And it's my birthday this weekend.
Oh yeah, that's pretty good.
1st of November. Wish me happy birthday if
happy
you can.
Birthday.
Actually, this will probably come out after.
No, well, actually, I think this will come out this week. So when's your birthday? Saturday?
Friday.
So this will come out the day after your birthday.
It was my birthday yesterday. Oh, what about you? What's good with you, our lovely guest?
I feel great about fireworks.
Oh, ooh, cool.
Both Diwali and Bonfire Night. I love them. So I'm really excited for this
lovely
time of year.
Perfect. Strong feelings for fireworks.
Yeah.
I like it.
My cat is less excited, but I'm good with it.
What's your cat called?
She's called Queenie.
Oh, good name.
She's the best.
Yeah, it's because she's a cat. They are the best.
Oh, I remember last Bonfire Night, because we've got two dogs and a cat, and we're not having a good time.
No.
So I had them all, like, on my bed, and I was like, it's all right, guys. Just, giving their heads a little pat, tell them it was all right. So
that's
kind of cute. Ultimately distressing for them, but hey.
You can't have it all.
No, that's true. What we're going to talk about this week is one of the newest exhibitions that's opened up at the MIMA, called For Many Voices by Mikhail Kakaris. I think I said it right. Did I?
Karikis.
Karikis. I said it again.
Mikhail Karikis.
Mikhail Karikis. We had this conversation just before recording and I still said it wrong, even after writing it down again. But hey ho.
Should do the phonetic. Oh. I've literally written K-A, the name Rick, and E-S.
Oh, that'll do it. Okay.
Karikis.
Oh,
is that right?
That'll work, yeah.
Yeah.
I should have got you to introduce it then.
Oh, wow.
I should have got Ellen to introduce it, because she's the senior curator here at MIMA. So do you want to give her a quick rundown about what this exhibition's all about?
Sure, yeah. So it's a solo exhibition of Mikhail Karikis's work, and it includes five big video installations and bodies of work from the last 10 years of his practice. So it's a survey of the work that he makes. And within that, there are pieces made with a whole range of different people in different places, which we could talk a bit more about. But the kind of key themes are to do with people's relationships with place and with land, often with labour and industry in those particular places, and also thinking very carefully about the voice in relation to place and land and labour and collective action and the power, the kind of political power of the voice. So all of the works, sound is really important within them, and they often give a kind of visual and audio portrait of a group of people at a particular moment.
I would agree.
Yeah, that was a good rundown.
A fantastic indication of what we should really be doing on this podcast. Your goals. Though I honestly feel like we just went round a mini film festival. This was fab. It was, so we just said before recording, it was so nice to be able to go around, see that many films, because they are like short
yeah,
films,
pretty much,
maybe
yeah.
Like averaging at what, like 10 minutes-ish, do you say?
Something like that.
And the time just flew by. We watched so much and watched them. We like made sure we got them when they like looped back, and some of them we watched twice, and we came out just like full, like very much bordering on art fatigue, which is, you know, the art exhaustion. But it was just so meaty. It was great. And I definitely want to talk about what you were talking about there with sound, because the sound pieces were just phenomenal. It was, I want to give it a hint to the audience, if you want something that might sound similar, and this is a bit of a stretch, do you know Bambi, the Disney film?
Yes.
Do you know the rainstorm? What's it? The drip, drip, drip.
The April shower. Yeah, yeah.
But all of that.
Yeah. Sorry, this is us.
Welcome to the podcast. No, that, all of that is like the storm is like, it's like a two choirs. It's like a male choir and a female choir. So the storm and the howling of the wind and things like that are all made. It's not necessarily instruments. It's like human voices, which was something that was quite prevalent here, which worked so well for that idea of identity, I think. And like,
well, that was like the first kind of piece that you're confronted with when you like step into the exhibition space. I wrote it down.
Sounds from Beneath.
Yes, Sounds from Beneath, which was amazing. It was a male's voice choir at Snowdown Colliery, and it's like them performing at like the mine where they used to work, and they're all like with their voices making sounds of like the machinery going and like stuff hitting like brick and like coal and stuff. And it was like all these kind of industrial and very kind of like workery sounds, but just coming out of voices. And it was like they're all just kind of standing there with their little cute little choir uniforms on, and it was just such an interesting thing to kind of be confronted with as soon as you kind of go in the space.
It was very much, I think, because sound, something you're instantly aware of without even knowing it. So it's kind of something that I know, if you're getting into film, a lot of people say invest in a good microphone, not necessarily a good camera, because people are like, poor sound quality is harder to forgive than poor visual quality. So I think this kind of like, I don't know, it was such an alien sound and yet so familiar. Like, you don't hear voices this way very often. And it was something that it happened, I saw it a few times in the different films. So that's just the first thing that came to my mind is that was amazing.
I think what Mikhail does so well is use, or and what he's really interested in doing is using sound and the voice particularly as a kind of sculptural material. And that's how he thinks about it. So the works in the show are, they're largely video installations, but he also, he makes all sorts of other things and started much more in kind of performance and using his own voice and training his voice as a material. And so when he then started working more intensively with other people, that continues as a methodology, but also a material. So thinking about the qualities of the voice, you know, my voice is within my body, but it's coming out and being projected. And then how is that being received through the way that someone's listening to it? Everything about the voice tells us different things about the identity of the person or how they're feeling, or, you know, even beyond the words that we're speaking. And I think he uses that so well. So in the first piece we're talking about, the miners, they're recalling a place that they haven't been into since the mine shut in 1987. And it's really emotional because the closure of the mine is tied up with all sorts of things to do with their identity. The sort of political and economic landscape that they're within, you know, how their community was structured around the mine. The closure of the mines tied in with the politics of the late 80s and the miners' strikes and the sort of...
there's something very masculine about that piece in particular. And I think it was because, you know, I think people being robbed of their jobs specifically impacts the masculine psyche in a very specific way. And there's, we noticed as well, a lot of that kind of industrial versus rural, or maybe not versus, maybe just together. There's just in each film, but this one being the first one where it was very much in your face. That the industrial and the rural together, and the conflicts, but also the way they kind of come together, and that there was, you know, the old gentleman and then the cracks in the earth, and there's like that, I don't know, it just felt like very about unity, which was amazing.
Because they sing this piece, don't they, which is the miner's lament, which there are all sorts of kind of stories and myths around, and that Mikhail was talking to us about the miner's lament being sung by the miners on their way home from work. And so it's this kind of, like you say, quite a unifying song, and also almost like a protest in the piece. But the miners now, they're older people, and they're quite, I think they look quite vulnerable. You know, you zoom in really close to the kind of like their grey hair blowing in the wind and their skin being marked by age. And there's something kind of different about how they're portrayed to how a lot of miners in our are shown as these like strong heroic figures, you know, if you think of like socialist realism and you know, portraits of like big brawny miners, there's a vulnerability about what's changed in their lives and the kind of marks of time on them, which, like you say, really relates with that, like the scarred landscape of the mine. And it's in Kent, which is not where a lot of people would imagine a landscape like that to be.
Yes.
And I think that goes to your point about the industry and like the rural and the industrial in the same place is one of the things that I love most about Tees Valley. Mm. Is that you just get this combination of these really dramatic, like in quotes, natural landscapes with incredibly sort of produced or manufactured landscapes to do with industry. But those things always go hand in hand because the industry is always coming from a set of circumstances or raw materials from the land.
Yeah.
So they're not separate and they're kind of, they're not contradictory, but they're often quite surprising combinations. And that's one of the reasons that we thought that Mikhail's work would work so well in Teesside, because those landscapes are kind of recognizable and those stories about miners, you know, they resonate in the northeast, or the in the Isle of Grain in the second piece, the landscape could be Teesside. There's all these horses.
We absolutely have to talk about that film.
Okay.
I think that might have been Alice's favorite.
I think it was, it's called Ain't Got No Fear. And it was just fantastic. So it was like, first of all, I never heard of the Isle of Grain.
I will never forget it now.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Finding that on a map later.
But it's just like a bunch of like kids, like young teenagers, and they're all kind of like, first of all, rapping, which is cool. And then
and pulling it off, which is even cooler.
That is, yes. But they're kind of talking about like kind of
their
future.
These boys are what, like 10?
Oh, remember, one of them says that they're nearly 13.
Yeah.
Of course.
They're kind of on the cut that, like, between childhood and adulthood, which I think is one of the beautiful things about it.
It's amazing. It was just so full of life. Mm. And it was all. So, this film's very much about, like, adventure and play and the secret spaces that children have. Mm. And I just love that because that's super whimsical. But then it was told through this really catchy rap that these kids had made themselves, and I'm just so thankful that there's that artists can go out into communities and like pull out these things that already exist but that wouldn't have had a spotlight or wouldn't have had an opportunity. And like, I think it's really exciting that art or the artist or the art institution can be this like middleman like not to make something happen necessarily, but to just celebrate something that's already happening.
Totally.
And that's very, I think the MIMA in general does that quite well. But this exhibition, I feel like we say that every time, but I'm a fan. I'm a big, big fan. Specifically, I've got, what's his name? Caricus? No?
Yeah.
Did I get it right?
Yeah.
I'm not good at names. Like, regular listeners know this. I have the most anxiety about getting people's names wrong, but big fan, new fan.
Oh,
so
great,
thank you. So you converted one person.
But I think you're right, there's so many parallels between the ways that Mikhail works and the ways that we work at MIMA.
Seems like a good fit.
Yeah, and we've been working together for 3 years now. You know, this is a long-term relationship, and it's about developing those connections between his practice and ours as an institution and relationships with a whole range of people here. And that piece made with the young people in the Isle of Grain, Mikhail worked with them for at least a year. You know, it's like a real investment of time.
You can tell. Yeah. I mean, like, even just the candid shots of them in the woods you know, with their bikes or just...
Well, they trust him, don't they?
Yeah, you can sense that he's an adult in their kid world, but you're getting to see what that world is really like.
Yeah, and so they really shaped that with him, which is why we wanted to... So the first piece that we talked about is the earliest work in the show. And then this piece, Ain't Got No Fear, is made in 2016. And there's quite a shift between them in terms of, like, the way that they're filmed and also...
Yeah.
And the second piece is... A lot of the footage is filmed by the young people on iPhones or like camera phones. So that already shifts some of the kind of power dynamic. It's much more dispersed. the idea for it and the form for it came from the young people, because they said to Mikhail they wanted to make a documentary about their lives. And as they talked more and more, he realised with them that that would be a music video. Because when they looked online at like things that they were calling documentaries, they were talking about YouTube videos and music videos.
I was just going to say, that makes sense for the media that they were probably consuming.
It had that vibe.
Exactly. So that's how they decided to construct it like that. And I think, yeah, the tone of it is quite different because it is through the young people's eyes. And it is, you can feel that it's very much a collaboration, whereas the first piece is more staged. It's more about a kind of choreography and a composition. And the second piece is more, it's like spliced together from footage made together.
Definitely. Yeah, because the first piece is an actual choir. And then the second piece is just some kids that wanted to sing. And I think that actually could describe the difference between the two films quite well, as one being very clear-cut, structured, organised.
And then formal.
Yeah, and then the other one just being like, well, yeah, I'm so glad you told me that they filmed all, like, just in general, but that they did it on, like, their phones or just a phone. That changes it. I want to go back and watch it again knowing that now, because... I didn't know that. Maybe I just didn't read it, but...
And they shared that piece back in the Isle of Grain through a kind of mobile cinema. So that, anyway, there's like a lot of stuff around that project, but it wasn't just about making the film. And a lot of the way that Mikhail works is that the film will be one part of a process and a conversation, but it's not necessarily the main event. If you like, the relationship is the main thing.
Yeah.
And then the art kind of coming through and coming out of that is... Yeah, it's just part of a sort of holistic or a sequence of events.
And something that I loved about this piece that I haven't quite touched on is like the soundscape for this one. It's all kind of made from the sounds of the demolition of the power plant that used to be on the Isle of Grain, which is cool because it sounds like kind of like techno-y. Like,
it's quite grime, isn't it?
Yeah, I would argue it's a bit of a bop because it was just...
It is definitely a bit of a bop.
Yeah. I would absolutely play that.
I think last time we were here, we're telling Laura the definitions of, like, what was it, a bop, a jam,
a
and a tune. Because there are differences, and I would say this one's a bit of a bop.
Okay. Yeah.
I can't remember the definitions of the other ones.
So. We'll have to listen back to find out. Love it.
So find that episode, listeners, and get in touch.
But I feel as though kind of that element of it, like the incorporation of like the power plant and the industrial kind of element, kind of ties in really nicely with the piece in the next room after that, which is called Children of Unquiet, because it's kind of all about an industrial town in Italy, about how kind of industries kind of just changed it and like made people kind of move away and not have jobs and stuff there. So it was again that kind of like industrial, like community focus, and again with kids, like lots of Italian school kids. And it was just cool and like really colorful and bright, and just it was just a fab piece.
Yeah, and also I definitely felt, because as I mentioned, it's very like industrial meets rural, but even though it's very much about people in these spaces, often the people are quite absent from the landscape. So it's good at, I feel like there's a lot of beautiful, in that one in particular, a lot of beautiful establishing shots that were equally quite creepy.
Yeah, a little bit.
Or maybe uncanny is a better word, just like something a little bit off. And I mean, I think just in general, the image of a full town that's abandoned apart from a gaggle of children is quite like, I mean, that's just the beginning of like an adventure novel, if you ask me, like YA dreams. But it was, so there's kind of something, there's like magical qualities in these films. There's something a little bit adventurous and something a little bit like, it's very much grounded in reality. But I think, so when I was at uni, I did this module about time and place, and I can't remember the theorist, but there was someone theorized that place isn't actually a location. It's like a, it's something that's a combination of your own personal memories and emotions and kind of how you kind of glob those together. And it's then you have this idea of a location that's special to you, and that could be a group of people, like we all have thoughts about school, for example, and your all of your classmates have that, a similar relationship with that place. but then you also have your own independent relationship. And so considering that, like, this village of this film, for example, it's like, it's not a it's a location, but the place itself is something experienced by the filmmaker and these children, and they're like trying to show us what that place is.
Yeah.
And the way that they've done it, I think, I mean, like I said, through the filming and through the sound is fascinating, but this one in particular with its absence of people was really, I think, really effective.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? I just went on a bit of a monologue there.
Yeah, so this one relate, I mean, maybe one thing to say is also that they, if you're paying close attention, each of the first three works that you see are very closely linked to conversations around ecology and environment, because yeah. each one is kind of linked to a like a power source. So the first one is a coal mine. The second one, the soundtrack, as you've said, is a power station being decommissioned, and they're both in Kent. And then the third one is this geothermal power plant.
It's my favourite type of energy.
Which is amazing, because it's
absolute favourite.
Completely green. It's powered from basically steam from the ground. It's quite incredible.
Yeah,
and their power plants can have, like, basically they're like completely safe. Mm-hmm. In theory, their power plants are like a perfect environment to work. And aren't there some that are like have hot springs and you can go and bathe in them and stuff?
Yeah, that'd be mint.
Yeah, like geothermal energy, listeners, Google it. Please do me a favor. I'll probably put something on the story.
And this is the first one in the world, this site.
No, oh, really?
Way. But and Dante's Inferno was based on that part of Italy and black. So there's like a whole other like art
I'm
history.
Freaking out.
And
I'm
is that
freaking
why it's
out.
Called Devil's Valley?
Yes.
Ooh, it all ties together.
Alice, when we were watching it, just turned to me and she's like, imagine just like living next to a patch of land that was just steaming.
It's like, amazing. And some of the shots in it are really stunning.
Yeah, eerie.
But I think what makes it, well, there's a few things to say to what you've just been describing. One thing is
I did just dump a lot. I'm really love sorry.
It. That eerie feeling, I think, comes because people no longer live in the workers' village because the power plant has been so automated.
Mm-hmm.
So the children are kind of discovering a place that they know about because their families and parents have been entwined with it, but they won't work there in the future. They don't live there. So
It's almost like it was a place for their parents and grandparents, but it's not a place for them.
Totally.
If you like see where I was coming from before.
Yeah. But I think one of the great things you described as this quite magical thing, I think that's because we're seeing through the children's imaginations of like the possibility of the place.
Mm.
So they're listening into the pipes and the ground and they're mimicking and imagining some of the noises. But they also, with Mikhail, made this whole body of work, all these other moving image works and drawings about what they would do with the site.
Oh, cool.
So there's a whole series of amazing ideas for how the site would be used and how they would take it over and think about it from a child's perspective. And I think that's some of the magic.
That. Yeah.
It
sounds like through his conversations with people, he's really like sparked something and giving this idea that actually you can make a difference and your ideas do matter and what you have to say and what you think is worthwhile and it should be expressed and
totally.
Just giving people the means to do that, which I think that's quite magical. So maybe that's why it's shining through.
Yeah,
I guess he talks a lot about listening as his main kind of device or technique, and I think that's what you've both said, that in a way, what he's doing is activating things that are already there or supporting people to develop ways of expressing that or develop skills around showing some of that. And then, making a space where other people can hear or tune in or be part of those ideas and imaginations. I think that is really powerful and really political.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's meant. One question I had about that, just because they're all wearing like kind of same colour outfits, I was just wondering if you knew why, because they're all kind of wearing like little like shorts and shirts, like they're all either all purple, all pink, all blue, or all yellow. So I was just wondering if you knew why they're all dressed like that.
I think it's a really good point because someone else has talked, I don't know who it was, one of our visitors was talking to me about colour. And actually, it's so important in the exhibition and in Mikhail's work. Like, for visitors, you'll see that you start off in quite a black and white kind of space. And then gradually these kind of shots of colour come through, either in like neons in masks worn by young people or in the clothes in this piece or in Sea Women, the next work. There's this amazing kind of quite like stark tones landscape and then all these like bolts of orange in the fishing equipment they use.
Like, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's everything's grey except when it isn't.
Yeah, right. And then it's really, really bright. And I think that colour is a kind of space of like possibility or imagination. Yeah. I know that might sound quite abstract, but I think it signals something about, yeah, like a more imaginative space within some of these landscapes that might feel quite... Mm-hmm. I don't know, like quite closed or quite doer in a way.
Yeah.
And the colour is like, yeah, this space of like the children's imagination.
Yeah. Little pockets of, little pockets of magic.
It's like activated in some way.
Because in like a lot of the, like the narrative that the, like the kids are talking about, they're talking about like wasps and pollination and stuff. So I was thinking like flowers and like nice, pretty... pretty things like that.
Yeah, is that in the next one?
Oh, it might be.
No, that is totally in Children of Unquiet. Yes. But then it follows through to the last piece, which is the two new commissions. One made with commissioned by Mima with Whitechapel and Film and Video Umbrella, and one just commissioned by us. And they both have a lot of colour in. And in the newest one, which is made with a primary school in Middlesbrough, North Ormsby Primary Academy, The piece is all about the role of insects and the importance of insects, and particularly bees in pollination, and what happens when we don't have enough insects to pollinate and humans have to start pollinating, which is happening. And the piece is in UV, which is how bees see.
Yeah, Alan, that fun fact today. So cool.
It's pretty cool. So in that one, colour is very much, tied to what you just said about, like, how are insects attracted to things and then how does that feed into like production and life cycles and those big ideas.
Yeah, because that's the bit, is that the piece where Mikhail shows them a video online about like Chinese workers like hand pollinating with feathers. And I love the kind of way the transcript of that conversation is shown with like blocks of text kind of flowing around each other, because obviously everyone talks at the same time, I imagine, or that's what comes across. And they're all saying, oh, that would take ages, why are they doing that? Just save the bees and bring them back.
Exactly.
So it's like, yeah, common sense, right?
The clarity of the children's vision is
absolutely. Like, they're not clouded by like adult stupidity.
Yes.
I need to just like interject that I'm sure I read something the other day where Walmart, This is a tangent. Walmart in America, I'm sure, are investing money in making robot bees. Why don't they just invest the money in saving the bees that we already have?
Which is exactly the conclusion that the children come to. They go through all these different ideas and they're like, wait, just save the bees.
Just save the bees. Like, it doesn't have to be the solution isn't difficult. I mean, doing it is, but we know what the answer is. Just do it. Come on, guys. That was my favorite. That was definitely the last one, which was the commission, wasn't it?
Yeah,
the Mima commission. I loved it. I loved, you walk in and there's little little coloured blocks to sit on. So it's like almost like you're in a child space, but it's a grown-up space and an art space.
What colour chair did you pick?
I can't remember.
I picked red because it was just.
I chose the one next to red.
Do you have a preferred seat in that little room?
I think I'd probably go with the kind of turquoise because we're on a bit of a thing. I've got a turquoise mic stand, a turquoise notebook, so I think I just have to complete the whole outfit.
Yeah, gotta stay on brand.
Makes sense. Yeah.
But I think it's quite an important point, isn't it, about the show that it's not only, they're not like videos in dark spaces. Each video is displayed in a really different way, which it was important. It is an installation,
yeah.
And all the screens are different and the ways that you experience them. So in Sea Women, there are these two massive freestanding screens and it's not a linear piece. You don't watch it from start to finish. It's much more about like being in a room, in a soundscape, in an experience.
I loved the way you'd sit and watch films.
Very unique.
To describe it, it was they're two screens equal size to all the other screens in the show and the various other rooms. And they're kind of at diagonals. So if you're at the very back, you could kind of see what's going on in both. But you're invited to sit on these mats and they're rolled up and at the back, so you can kind of have a bit of back support, get a pillow.
Yeah,
it's lush.
A nice lie down.
Yeah, it's nice actually, because by this time we'd watched like five films, so we're like, well, now I need a proper lie down.
Exactly. It
took you there. Yeah, it set the tone, set the mood. I loved it because that was set in Korea.
Filmed in Jeju Island off the south of South Korea. Yeah, that I think I'm not really probably supposed to have favourites, but it might be my favourite.
We do like to ask what favourites are.
We're
like,
going to put like, you in that tough position, but I'm glad you offered that information for
I just love it because I love the fact that it's filmed. The people in it are these like 80-year-old
boss
amazing divers who free dive without any equipment. For up to 20 metres, Mikhail said, which is an incredible depth.
Oh my goodness.
And they've developed this very particular breathing technique to be able to do that. And that's one of the sounds you hear in the space, is this kind of whistling, which is what led Mikhail to the group of women when he was doing a residency on Jeju Island.
Oh, okay.
He started hearing this sound, and because he's so tuned into sound and voice, he was obviously really like drawn to it. And
the siren song.
Yeah, and he didn't know who they were or what they were doing. I think to start with, he didn't even know if they were human, because you see kind of figures emerging from the sea in these black wetsuits. They could almost be like seals or dolphins whilst they're underwater.
Yeah.
And then started to realise what they were doing and started looking into it. And I think he was the first person to record those sounds.
Oh.
And that was then, his recordings were then used by David Attenborough on a documentary.
Oh my goodness, imagine.
It was a kind of incredible, amazing, you know, like primary research and building this relationship with these women who he couldn't speak with, but they could clearly communicate because they're having a really funny time together.
You can see those tons of like clips of them. Well, I don't know if about visually, but definitely like sound wise, just like having like really kind of energetic conversations and laughing and stuff.
There's
maybe fighting
laughter.
As well. We're
maybe
not too
fighting,
sure.
Yeah.
There's a really, really full-on person who's always shouting at the others.
Yeah.
And I love that.
I seem like the boss lady.
Yeah, exactly.
I heard her.
Yeah.
I felt attacked. No.
Yeah, I love that piece though.
I can see why you like it. It's particularly like human, that one. Yeah. There's lovely shots of like everybody's shoes.
Like cooking lunch together.
I was about to say sitting down for food.
Mm-hmm.
And Alice, you like the one of them on their mopeds.
Oh yeah, I love that. They're all in the wetsuits and like just getting their scooters. And I'm sure there's a trike as well.
Yeah.
Just like getting ready to go diving. Just such a fun image. Because again, these are like old ladies.
Yeah.
But like
so
hardcore
cool.
old ladies.
Absolutely. I want to be that cool when I'm old.
Definitely goals.
And there was another shot I really liked. It was like of one of the ladies like cleaning like goggles, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it looked like really like well used and battered. So like I was wondering if maybe it's like that's something she's had for years, if she's done this diving for ages, or if it was like passed down to her. Because it's like
kind of like a miner's lamp or something.
Kind of, yeah. Because I think it said in like the bit of info on the wall that like younger generations of women just don't want to do it. They're like, no, I don't want to dive to like get seafood and stuff. They want to just do other things or move away from the island or something. So it's kind of potentially becoming like a lost art.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And it is a kind of craft or an art form in itself, the ability they have. And that's how Mikhail talks about it as well. I mean, yeah, for all sorts of reasons, women aren't going into it. You have to train from a very young age and be completely dedicated.
I can imagine. It's like a sport.
It is amazing, yeah. And they used to be pearl divers.
Oh.
So, of course, that would be, you know, that would have a different kind of function and also be more lucrative, probably.
Yeah,
and now they're diving for seafood, which is increasingly difficult because of all the big trawlers, which are like, you know, raking up all the seafood and fish and not really leaving much for the sea women. And yeah, I guess as, you know, as the ecology of the island changes, it just becomes harder and harder to make a living from it. So it is really fun and really beautiful, but it's quite a sad piece in some ways. A little bit like seeing the first piece with the miners. There are these kind of conversations across generations in the show.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of stuff about young people's imaginations and voices and desires, but also about
histories.
The legacy they're left by older generations. And, you know, how do you deal with that? And what do you do with that? So there's a lot to think about. Or you can just lie back and enjoy,
yes.
You know, like lie on those mats and think, wow, I wish I was diving with those women.
It is good in that sense that I feel like this is definitely a show that you can take away whatever you want to take away, that you can just go and come on your lunch break and just see a film or two. Or you can do what we did and watch all of them like twice and like super like swat up on it. Mm-hmm. So, because I don't know, it's... If film isn't necessarily your thing, if kind of audiovisual stuff, because I think audiovisual can be quite tricky to do.
Yes.
I think this is a great example of how a gallery can do it really well. Because especially that it's every room is dedicated to a film piece. Mm-hmm. That I feel like you were treading in like, you know, it was difficult waters for a second there. But you pulled it off. Yeah. It was
and
great.
And there was a whole new room. It was like the third piece with the kids in Italy. I was like kind of sitting there and I was like looking at Rosie. I was looking around. I was like...
She was like, where are we? Yeah. isn't this meant to be a big room?
Yeah. I mean, the main thing, I was like, oh, there's carpet in here now. But then it was also like, this seems like an extra room. So I just love how art galleries do that. Just put up a wall. One down.
The actual quote was... Oh, galleries.
It is kind of amazing, like, what you can do to reconfigure space. And we have an incredible technical team.
Well, so, you know, just while we're on air, I'm going to put you in a tricky position. And one day, I'd love to see the behind the scenes of an install.
Yeah, of course.
We'd keep it all under wraps until the preview.
No, we'd love to have you.
Oh, I'm in.
That would be great.
This is something that, because Shy Ben's getting out, so it's always worth asking. But I don't know, like, we've talked about this a lot. We see really polished, lovely exhibitions. And having been part of exhibitions, I know that's like, it's a long way to get there. So I'd love to see how, like, you know, a big, important gallery like the Mima does it.
That is my favourite moment in the job, so you should definitely come and share it.
Ooh. Well, stay tuned, guys. Watch this space.
Okay.
Give you the
February
inside
time.
Scoop.
Yeah. Because when does this exhibition close? It closes in February, right?
It is, yeah. End of February. And Sally's just writing me down the date, the 23rd of February. And on the 15th of February, there's a study day dedicated to looking in more depth at all the themes and ideas in Mikhail's work. So that's free. It's like a whole afternoon of talks, chats, tours, lunch with some interesting sound specialists.
Ooh.
And probably some social historians, or we'll just mix it up, but all around what you see in the show.
That does sound amazing.
So come. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Ooh.
Nice. You're here to hear first, guys.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that probably about does it for giving all the exhibitions a bit of a skim. There's so much to see.
Yeah, we couldn't possibly do it justice. We could easily do an episode on each film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, probably.
But oh, that would be nice.
But we won't.
Yeah, but we simply don't have time.
So yeah, definitely. I mean, just come down and check this out. You've got ages. What is it now? It's November when this comes out.
Yay.
So
it's the second of.
3 months? Yeah, that's enough time.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah, and it's always worth a trip to Middlesbrough. There's loads going on. We never escape. Considering moving
loads elsewhere in the town and in other places in the Tees Valley. And there's always something happening at Mima. There's always a talk
or a
workshop or a something. So definitely come.
Yeah. And did we see on the wall there's something? Because we're going to see something at the Star and Shadow in Newcastle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, was it? It's like a film screening workers something.
So it's like a social
Tees
history.
Tees Together, that'll be it. The next Tees Together, which is a monthly, it's like a workshop discussion group that look at all sorts of stuff. And it's on the 7th of November. It's with Ben Lamb, who's an academic from the university, and Northeast Film Archive. And I think it's looking at, I don't set this part of the program up, but from memory, it's looking at the welfare state through film.
It will be a really good one for sure. I'm very excited. So I didn't know that those things were
happening.
Like interlinked or whatever. Very and well remembered.
Yes. Yeah. Northeast Film Archive, NEFA, is like based within the university. It's not part of the university as such. So we work a lot with them to digitize things that they have and show them in exhibitions and do events together. So
it makes the dream work.
They've got so much. It's quite amazing. You should go to the archives one day.
I love a good archive. Yeah.
Right, let's get on it. This is why we're like coming to the MEMA, guys. It's inspiration for days.
Connect you up.
Well, what like one thing we'd like to do before we end is to think about something we might be looking forward to or something good that's about to happen. Just to bring it back to a positive note. Are you looking forward to anything?
Oh my God, what am I looking forward to?
This is like the moment where your entire life flashes before your eyes.
Sorry,
in my mind.
It can be something little.
Oh, do you know what? I'm going to see Hustlers tonight at the cinema.
See, that's the sort of thing.
And I love J-Lo, so I'm just into
perfect.
It.
Perfect. Yeah.
So that'll do.
That was fab.
Oh, that's good. That's very good. My thing I'm looking forward to is really stupid. I'm just looking forward to not having a cold anymore.
Oh, okay.
I've only had it for 3 days and it's the bane of my life, so.
3 days.
Roll on the health.
Yeah. So that's my thing.
Well, I hope you get better.
Oh, thank you.
I'm not just laughing at you because I'm a horrible friend. I'm looking forward to not the weekend that you're listening to this, but next weekend, because I've been working every weekend for like 5 weeks. Mm. So I'm not going to work any more weekends. It's going to be amazing. I'm going to work them, but like art stuff.
Okay. That sounds good.
So more fun.
Yeah, like my work.
Yeah.
And it's your birthday.
And it's my birthday!
Oh, what are we doing for your birthday?
Oh, we're going to Wylam Brewery has an event called Argy Bargy, and it's like loads of different food vendors come together at the brewery and like all sell different curries and stuff, and then you get to decide like which one wins, which one was the best one. So it's like
so good.
It's a brewery, excellent. Man.
I would recommend it if you're free at the week. I think it's the entire weekend, like Friday through Sunday.
Yeah. Oh, and I do want to shout out real quickly that it's now special this weekend, and we're not.
Oh.
And I don't even know if I'm going, but they weren't allowed to advertise.
Oh,
because
what?
Something stupid. It was on the Instagram that like it's something like the illustration, which was amazing, got flagged. Yeah. Like just because it wasn't, you know, it's not real people that go through and censor stuff. It's like a computer system that does it.
Yeah.
So they weren't allowed to advertise. So go to Now It's Special if you're not doing anything tonight. It's a Time Bank Brewery.
Yes, different brewery.
Cool. Nice.
Right, perfect.
Can I just say how much I love it that you call it the MEMA? Because that's what everyone calls it, and it's my favourite name for it. Or possibly Da MEMA, which is also
Da
good.
MEMA. I like the MEMA. Our MEMA. Oh. Love you, MEMA. We say that all the time.
We do.
Love you, MEMA.
Love you, Heya.
Yay. And on that note,
thank you so much
for being on the show.
Yeah,
it was a pleasure. I had so much fun.
Thank you. Come back soon.
Yep. Yeah. We'll do.
We're big fans, so we always listen in.
Oh, that's so nice.
Well, until next time.
Lovely. Bye.
Bye.